This is Building Bridges, your community and labor report, produced and hosted by Mimi Rosenberg and Ken Nash. The AFL-CIO is mounting a national campaign to put America back to work and ensure that the banks, whose reckless acts created the jobs crisis, pay to create the jobs they destroyed. Saying that neither Congress nor the Obama administration has proposed an adequate jobs bill, the AFL-CIO is calling for extended supplemental unemployment benefits and demanding the banks help state and local governments overcome their shortfalls.
Organized labor is demanding that fees be imposed on Wall Street banks to pay back the cost of the bank bailout, that a special levy be placed on Wall Street bonuses, that there be increased taxes placed on hedge fund and private equity managers, and that there be imposition of a financial transaction tax. We're joined by Dan Pedrotti, the director of the AFL-CIO's Office of Investment.
Thanks for having me on, Ken and Mimi.
Dan, I've always been in favor of imposing taxes on banks. I was in favor even before this crisis. Now that this has come up, I think is especially appropriate. Why don't you just give us a little background on why now is the time?
Absolutely. So millions of people are out of work today because Wall Street played Russian roulette with our economy and our future. And I think we're now learning that unregulated greed and letting the markets govern themselves really failed our economy. And these, frankly, were the policies of both Democratic and Republican administrations. So we at the AFL-CIO are leading a nationwide grassroots campaign for good jobs, kicking that off with 200 rallies and demonstrations around the country, calling on Wall Street and the biggest banks to do three things. First, to pay to replace the jobs they destroyed. We need a nationwide movement to create 11 million good jobs. Second, that they stop fighting financial reform. And third, that they start getting credit flowing and lending to communities and small businesses.
Dan, before we parse out the program, which is one that I'm very enthusiastic about, I'd like to just get a sense from you of the following analysis. Why aren't people collectively more incensed? Why aren't we out as groups of unemployed, groups of workers, groups of people who have not been admitted to the workforce saying I'm mad as hell and I'm not going to take it anymore? Why have we almost ceded that to the right wing?
I think people are beginning to, but we have a lot more work to do. I think we have a lot more work to do in channeling the private frustration and anger into public action. But by way of example, our president, Rich Trumka, was in Philadelphia on Friday, and he led almost 2,000 workers to a branch of Bank of America and brought in a check that he requested we deposit to get our money back from Bank of America and the other five banks that really crashed our economy. So he, in telling the story of being at that rally, really sensed that this is the beginning of something, that after a win on health care with budding movements around immigration reform, where we had 200,000 people turn out to the National Mall on Sunday, that there is a sense that we can change things in this country, but also that we need to hold accountable those people who really gambled with our economy and gambled with our future.
By the way, I just want you to say this again. Ken and I had been debating about what we didn't see in the media. We knew there were tens of thousands,
that's
but you're saying
yeah.
200,000 people turned out for immigration?
200,000 people on the Mall.
How wonderful.
Turned out for a rally that really was pulled together in about 6 weeks. You know, we're fully behind both the Dream Act, but other efforts to get comprehensive immigration reform done. Arlene Holt-Baker, our executive vice president, was at the rally, and she said it was something that reminded her of the broad movement around civil rights and that it was truly a historic day. March 21st was also the day of the march over the bridge that John L. Lewis led. So the people were out for immigration reform on the Mall. We were inside the halls of Congress pushing people to vote for health care reform, and now we're shifting gears to this campaign for good jobs.
And that was the John L. Lewis when he marched over the Edmund Pettus Bridge, which led to the passage eventually of the Voting Rights Act.
That's exactly right. And it was truly historic for Arlene to see John L. Lewis in the chamber leading the effort to get health reform passed and also stand up, frankly, to a lot of the vestiges of what we saw back in the civil rights area, the ugliness and the racism, and overcoming that and showing here's what we're going to move to next, I think gave a lot of us a big boost of morale.
Just as an aside, when the Times says tens of thousands, what the situation really is, then it's 200,000.
Just multiply.
The news said thousands, so it would discount them. But
that's right.
The shorthand really doesn't fit the facts. But let's move on to, very briefly, what is happening in Congress or what is not happening in Congress now, because it's so paltry. And then a summary of the proposals that the AFL-CIO has with regard to what should be done.
Right. So things are moving in the right direction in Congress. It's just not enough. We really make the analogy to putting a Band-Aid on a gaping wound. We need to fill or create 11 million jobs in this country. That's 9 million jobs that have been destroyed since the beginning of the Great Recession and 2 million jobs to keep pace with population growth. So there was a bill that passed last week, a $17 billion jobs bill. But again, it's not enough. It's not enough for the crying need to create jobs in this country. So what we're saying is we really need to see a jobs bill with five big components. First, we saw in the last jobs bill an extension of unemployment. That's a good thing. That's going to put money back in people's pocket and get money generating in the economy again. Second, we need to rebuild our crumbling infrastructure. Third, we need to get increased aid to state and local governments. We shouldn't be throwing teachers and firefighters and police under the bus because of what Wall Street did. Fourth, we need to fund jobs in neglected communities. And fifth, and this was an idea that President Obama floated in his State of the Union that we've been talking about for a while, is use TARP money to get credit flowing to small businesses so they can go out and create jobs and eliminate the middleman of the Wall Street banks and get that credit flowing again and jobs created in the short term.
Who would be using the TARP money, and what makes us think that it would actually lead to lending, because the TARP money didn't lead to any lending? I mean, do we need a public option? Do we need public banks to do this?
Well, that's where we're intending on steering this money. I think getting it away from the big banks who, as you said, can really have sat on the money or used the money to pay bonuses, right, going back to their old ways. What we're saying is get the money to credit unions, to community banks, to those banks that are closest to their communities and know the needs and know the people they'd be lending to, that by steering it away from the banks who've taken our money and not, gone back to their own ways, is a start to getting credit flowing again. And every business where we have workers organized, every business that we're talking to out in the community is saying over and over again, the money is just not there for them to be able to rehire people and get the economy going again.
So, Dan, is there any indication that some of the billions of dollars that are left over from the Troubled Asset Relief Program, the TARP funds, are going to be or can or will be placed back in to really create this lending situation that would stimulate some creation of jobs through small and medium business?
Well, we think so. We think with President Obama's leadership, with him getting behind this bill, and pushing people like the Treasury Department to really follow through on this, that's going to make a difference. And we're seeing even in the Senate some moderate senators like Mark Warner from Virginia really insist on this being a central part to getting jobs created again. So we think there's been a good start. We think now that health care, with the Senate fix being voted on this week, now that health care reform will be achieved, that the Congress will shift their focus completely to job creation, and this is going to be a key part of it.
And now here's the tricky part. To fund this, we're talking about taxing the banks.
That's right.
How would that be done?
So we have a number of ideas that we think make sense. First and foremost is what we call a financial speculation tax. So this would be a tax on trades by banks. This is something that is in place in the U.K., that people over here like Warren Buffett and Pete Peterson have endorsed. For us, it's going to do two things. First, it'll raise money for the ideas that we just talked about to get jobs created, raise between $100 billion and $300 billion. But second, it's going to also change the speculative short-term behavior that got us in this boat in the first place, that really brought down our economy. So that's central to our idea for how to pay for this. There's a bill in Congress right now that Senator Harkin is leading that we think is a good start to this. Second, I think, again, being in New York, we all know about the power of the private equity firms and hedge funds. We want to see those managers of private equity and hedge funds who play with other people's money pay the same rate on their income, their carried interest, as the people who clean their offices and the people who serve them food. Right now, they pay a capital gains rate, and we want to see that loophole closed. So we think those are just two ways to start to level the playing field for working people, to start to rein in Wall Street and have Wall Street pay to replace the jobs they destroyed and be the servant of the real economy. And I guess what one last is a special levy on Wall Street bonuses, an excise tax on bonuses. We saw this with the congressional action around AIG. And again, this is something that's in place in the UK, and something as recently this weekend that Senator Jim Webb of Virginia has been calling for to really fill that funding gap to create jobs.
I just want to place special emphasis on this financial transactions tax, what we used to call in New York the stock transfer tax,
right?
Because that's really where the big money is, isn't
it?
That's
right.
And the banks always in New York have said, well, you can't do that. We'll move out.
Well, that's exactly right. And what we saw in the UK is the banks made the same claim when that tax was put in place. And after that tax was put in place, the UK went from the third largest capital market to the second largest. So it's just not a credible claim. And really gets at the banks and speculators who aren't engaged in any kind of productive activity. It exempts pension funds and workers' retirements. It has a threshold of over $50,000 and would be a tax of 0.25% on those banks and speculators who just churn throughout the market, who make thousands of trades every hour. So those are the people it's targeted at, both in terms of raising money, but also changing the way our economy invests and where our economy invests.
I want to chirp in here and add one thing to the whole thing of rebuilding America's infrastructure. I know that generally the call goes out for rebuilding the schools as well they should, and roads and energy systems, although I think I'd have some strong differences about what kind of energy systems we're talking about with certainly with President Obama and, for that matter, the AFL. But one of the things that isn't in there when you talk about rebuilding the infrastructure is the question of housing.
Right.
Which I'm really staggered about in this whole crisis that we've talked about windows and energy efficient housing and foreclosure, never, ever, ever talked about rental housing. So I just want to get added to the board for a moment to add that to the list.
Absolutely. No, and Mimi, I think that's a critical component, both in terms of foreclosure relief, but also finding affordable housing for the hundreds of thousands of people in every city out there who can't find it. So we think that's a central component, not just rebuilding homes, but also expanding the pool of affordable rental housing for people who are priced out of the market. There can't be any higher emphasis that we place on that and really getting this right going forward.
Dan, I was just interested in your analysis on paper. It indicated that there was $2.2 trillion in unmet infrastructure needs. And how do you put that analysis together? Where does that come from?
Well, I think that's from the Society of Engineers has both graded the current infrastructure but said also here are our unmet needs. So it's the Army Corps of Engineers has said this is the total gap in spending that we need to fill in order to bring our infrastructure up to the world-class quality that it should be. And frankly, you know, the stimulus bill was a good start, but it was a down payment. And the comparison for us that's pretty illuminating, we always talk about competing with China and other world economies. China spent 9% of their GDP last year on infrastructure. We spend a fraction of that. So we're really talking about a multiple of the money we need to invest. So we have a world-class road system, we have world-class schools, we have world-class housing, and we don't have bridges that are collapsing around us anymore. We've got plenty of work to do. And you see even in states like Pennsylvania, people like Ed Rendell saying this is just a critical unmet need that we need to address.
How does bank reform fit into this whole thing? Is this just something to prevent another crisis, or would this in some way help with overcoming the results of this past crisis?
I think it's absolutely critical to rein in Wall Street speculative practices and really fundamentally reform our nation's capital markets. I think one of the accelerants to the crisis was the deregulation that we saw, again, under both Democrats and Republicans. So whether it's getting at the too big to fail question or creating an independent consumer financial protection agency, this is absolutely essential and something the labor movement has been campaigning around now for a year. And we actually had a good step. We saw the Senate Banking Committee report a bill out that we think is a very good start. The House of Representatives, through Barney Frank's leadership, has passed the bill, and now we're one step closer to real financial reform. But that's not to say that, that the banks aren't trying to lobby every day to water that down or block it. But it's to say that, that with the victory around health care, we feel like we can beat these people. You know, the healthcare industry spent about $100 million to block the bill that passed last night. The banks are spending a multiple of that. By our count, there are three lobbyists for every one member of Congress around this financial reform. But Mimi, to your earlier point, I think we're getting out there in the field. We're channeling that private anger, and we're showing them that this isn't just something the labor movement wants to see. It's something America wants to see. We have to rein in the power of the banks because they've not only dominated our real economy, they've dominated, financialization has dominated our politics as well.
You know, when we talk about a jobs agenda, and of course you know this, and this goes really to almost the last point that you were making, there's enormous hostility to the issue of government and government as employer, at least from very vociferous sectors of our communities and government. So I think it's imperative, but how do you begin to get across the idea, and what is the plan for if the private sector doesn't provide the needed jobs, that the government should step up to the plate and do so?
I think people do understand that this idea of unregulated greed and letting the markets govern themselves being a good thing, that idea failed our economy. And, you know, people are standing up now and saying, you know, Wall Street, we won't be your ATM anymore, that your joyride at our expense is over. And that, you know, isn't it ironic that conservatives believe in law enforcement for every industry except the capital markets? Well, we feel like there has to be a counterweight to the power of the banks. And this is something that if you ask the general public, they overwhelmingly agree on, that 80% feel, yes, there needs to be an independent consumer watchdog that will police banks and payday lenders and credit card companies. So I think it's exhibiting to people, and people know, they feel in their bones that banks have control over our economy. I think as Dick Durbin, the senator, said back during the credit card debate, frankly, they own the place. Well, we're taking them on right now, and we're going right at them. That's what this campaign is about, and that's what financial reform is about. But I think, Mimi, it's showing them, it's reminding people of the grip that Wall Street and banks have over their lives, the amount of debt they're in, the debt-financed consumer spending that got us here in the first place, but also showing them here's a better way. Here are reforms that can rein in the power of these banks and really bring a better sense of balance to our economy.
Can reforms really work? Maybe we need a public option on banks, public banks.
Well, I think it's worth considering. I mean, movement I would commend to your listeners is the Move Your Money campaign that people like Arianna Huffington have led to say, If you're in a relationship with your bank where they continue to take advantage of you, you can get out of that. So I think yes, this can happen. And people like Elizabeth Warren have been very articulate about how we had, you know, dips and ups and downs in our economy, but never the kind of crisis that we went through. And the reason we were able to ride out prior bubbles is we had fundamental reforms in place. We had rules of the road. And when we rolled them back, that's how we got to this point where speculative bubbles and risk-taking took on too much risk. So I think we can get there. I think the president is prepared to fight for this. And I think, in the next few months, we're going to have votes for members of Congress, in the Senate especially, where they're going to be forced to choose. Either they stand with bankers or they stand with families. And we feel good about that fight.
Well, let's hope that the federal government also does another part of your plank here, which is to really increase the aid to state and local governments maintain our services. And if people want to find out much more about this campaign, which is going to rise to a crescendo and alter the power paradigms, where can they go, Dan?
Well, they can go to aflcio.org/jobs and find out about these activities across the country, and find out about our policy proposal and really learn about our campaign in the weeks and months ahead. I will give people a short preview. We're going to be holding a large march on Wall Street at the end of April, on April 29th, so stay tuned for that. and we would look forward to the fight ahead and leading this charge on behalf of all workers.
That's great.
We'll have you back on April 29th with some real sound straight from the belly of the beast.
We look forward to it.
Dan Pedrotti, the director of the AFL-CIO's Office of Investments, thanks for the preview on the AFL-CIO Jobs Agenda.
Thank you to you both. Appreciate it.
And now on the Make Wall Street Pay campaign trail, first a demonstration in Hartford, Connecticut at a Bank of America office. Then another AFL-CIO rally marches into Morgan Stanley's offices in Cincinnati, featuring Arlene Holt Baker, AFL-CIO Executive Vice President.
Seen a year like this where we have no work. What happened was I went to work in the beginning of the year, and I worked for 10 months this year, and I ran out of unemployment. I started collecting unemployment, then my benefit year ended, and now I'm penalized. I got my unemployment cut in half. So we got to do something.
Thanks, Pete. Yeah.
Pete went back on unemployment for half of what he was out on. Now that's what we call reverse equity. That's for sure, that these guys get bonuses and Pete gets his benefits reduced in half.
We are not your ATM. We are not your ATM.
We are not your ATM.
We just a big boy's slap. We can hold us in the back. They know what you owe, you can bet they gonna get everything. They need $3 billion to make new jobs for us. Man, that's great. Can you tell me how come there ain't any?
When they graduate or find a job, Morgan Stanley paid, get this, $3 million to their lobbyists to kill financial reform. While Morgan Stanley refuses to lend money to small businesses here in Ohio, they're keeping the company afloat with $10 billion of your hard-earned money. We bailed out these big guys behind us, so now it's time to take that money and give it to the community and local banks so that they can start to hire people. So we're going to march over there to Morgan Stanley, and we're going to deliver this message. Stop refusing to pay your fair share to create the jobs that you destroyed. Let's march on them. Let's make sure that they hear us. But make sure, brothers and sisters, that they get the message. We are serious.
Wall Street.
What do we want to pay?
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 Wall Street.
Let us rise and take our own. Take what's owing, take our land. It's time we got together and united make a stand. And smite those minds of marble, remove the gods.
Well, this has been Building Bridges, your community and labor report with Mimi Rosenberg.
And Ken Nash. And log on to our new website at www.buildingbridgesradio.org.